Hey, good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doré, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley.
Hi, Arnel.
Hey, guys. Good to have you back. Naturalistic Support is a new approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. Combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support, on this program, we help each other. And this happens when you call us to talk about yourselves as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And today, we'll be looking at the loneliness epidemic. You know, it's an epidemic, Sharon.
I have heard that, yes.
Yeah, it's scary. In 2023, the U.S. Surgeon General called loneliness and isolation a public health crisis as deadly as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. And according to the Cigna U.S. Loneliness Index, so that's an insurance company that was studying loneliness, nearly half of the U.S. adults report experiencing loneliness on a regular basis.
That's not a very high figure. It sounds so high.
I know, it does sound high, but, you know, can't argue with statistics. Well, I guess you can, but that's what they seem to have. That's their findings. So, in our high-tech age of hyperconnectivity, where virtually everyone has a cell phone in their pocket, what exactly is causing this public health crisis? So, what is the loneliness epidemic? Maybe, Sharon, you could read a little bit about that for us.
Okay. Loneliness is the perceived gap between desired social connection and actual connection. And we need to distinguish that from social isolation, which is the objective lack of contact, versus solitude, which can be chosen and restorative. Loneliness is increasingly recognized as a public health problem, not just a personal issue. So who is affected by this loneliness? Adolescents and young adults have the highest rates of loneliness globally, worsened by social media pressures. Middle-aged adults, peak loneliness occurs around midlife in the U.S. Older adults, 25 to 30% of adults 65 plus are socially isolated. Cross-cultural data, individualistic societies, United States and UK, for example, report higher loneliness than collectivist ones.
So let me
like
just
Japan, yeah, and so, Latin America.
Yeah, so let me just intercede here for a second. You know, what's interesting about who's affected is, you know, at first glance, it does seem like everyone is affected. You know, we're talking about young adults and adolescents, middle-aged adults, older adults. I mean, you know, that just seems like, okay, that kind of, what does that leave out? Doggies? I mean, and they seem lonely.
It leaves out children under 13.
Yeah, I guess.
And I know they're lonely, too. And I know that.
And they're lonely, too. And you know, it's what's interesting is what I've found as I've been researching this is every group claims to be uniquely lonely. You know, just their level of loneliness exceeds the others. Let me play a clip which kind of talks about the loneliness crisis. In 2023, when the U.S. Surgeon General came out with that report, this story on NBC came out.
Walking clubs are taking off, and it's not just the exercise.
You're connecting with someone, which is something that I was kind of missing.
More and more people are missing that connection and are feeling lonely.
The pandemic poured fuel on a fire that was already burning.
Dr. Vivek Murthy, the U.S. Surgeon General, says loneliness is an epidemic, the focus of an 80-page advisory he is releasing today.
We're used to thinking about smoking and obesity as clear public health concerns.
So you're saying loneliness is comparable to smoking in terms of the detriment to your health?
Yeah, in terms of the risk that it poses for premature death, yes.
Half of U.S. adults experience measurable loneliness, and it's greater among young adults.
When you struggle with loneliness, when you're socially disconnected, it increases your risk of depression and anxiety and suicide, but it also increases your risk of physical illness as well.
Loneliness increases the risk for heart disease, stroke, and among older adults, dementia. The cure, Dr. Murthy says, is not only personal change, but societal change as well.
What we need to do is actually rebuild social infrastructure in our country.
You're talking about changing the social fabric. Mm-hmm. That's been decades in the making.
It's been decades in the making, but it's also something that I'm confident that we can address when if we put our mind to it and if we act together.
Among his recommendations, a focus on community organizations, mobilizing the health sector to raise awareness, and reconsidering how we use technology.
In-person matters. Connecting online has its place, has its value, but it's not a substitute for in-person connection. We really do need both.
Cultivating and supporting time together, face-to-face, because our health depends on it. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News.
That sums up some of the risks that are associated with this. It sounds like it couldn't be that bad, but apparently it is.
I'm curious whether, the measurements, which group is suffering the most, who feels it most intensely, and which group has the highest physical impacts, reflects the way we feel. And I keep thinking, when I was young, when I was in my 20s, if I'd been physically isolated, sexually isolated, I would have been in torment.
Yeah.
Whereas now I'm actually quite happy being on my own quite a lot of the time. I think the young must feel that physical isolation so acutely.
Yeah. Not only is there, not only is it kind of confusing to think about, well, do the young suffer more than the people over 65 who often are lonely because they've lost friends to early death or they've lost partners to death or whatever, divorce or breakups or whatever makes somebody alone. A lot of people older are alone. So who's suffering the most? And what's also interesting is I found that there is also a disagreement about whether this is a problem more among men or among women.
Now that's very interesting.
Yeah. Let me just play another brief clip. This is really brief. It's like a 40-second clip about loneliness as it affects women.
Everyone deserves to feel a sense of belonging, but in today's world, that is becoming increasingly harder to do, and we are facing a loneliness epidemic that goes beyond the already very lonely periods in life that women face. From the isolation in early motherhood or first-time motherhood to women getting lonelier as they progress in their careers. Men get less lonely, women get lonelier. And in Canada, I'm in Canada, senior women are almost double as likely, they're almost twice as likely to be lonely than senior men. So on top of these already lonely periods in a woman's life, the world is just getting lonelier. So how do we combat this loneliness?
Yep, you see, so that's one perspective. And then we have the opposite being said, that the loneliness epidemic really weighs hard on men, partially because of the sometimes more superficial, less emotional ways men engage with each other. Let me play this clip about male loneliness.
There are, of course, exceptions. Buddies who know all about intimacy and coziness, camaraderie and connection. But let's state the darker and more general truth plainly. Friendship is difficult for men. For every man who can claim a decent male friend, there must be at least eight who, in the honesty of their deep minds, know they have none that truly merit the term. The problem, though it strikes at an individual level, is anchored in larger societal forces. Men are lonely not through any specific deficiency on their part, but because of an inherent conflict between what's required of being a man on the one hand and what's involved in being a friend on the other. The bedrock of true friendship is, unfortunately, mutual vulnerability. We may naturally foster a friendship by discussing how many goals Manchester United scored in the year of the last World Cup, or how hypersonic aeroplane engines work, or the average return of an S&P 500 stock. There can be a certain interest in thinking together about the classical influence within Picasso's late period, or the idea of justice in Plato's The Laws, or the influence of Plotinus on early Renaissance thought. But genuine friendship, the sort that nourishes and sustains, that argues against despair and helps with the eeriness of the early hours, that has to begin somewhere else. It starts the moment that one person says to another, I'm going out of my mind, or I hate my partner's guts, or I'm terrified, or help me. It starts when a man can admit, I'm in love with a colleague, or I can't get it up anymore, or the anxiety never stops. There won't be a friendship that properly counts until we can reveal ourselves to be as weak as we are, until we can confess that we've been lying to preserve face, and that the truth is far ghastlier and sadder, far more tender and more pathetic than we've yet been able to let on. Regrettably for men, since the earliest days, across civilizations, it's been self-evident that to be a man involves something else entirely, being unflinching and solid, unperturbed and straightforward, buoyant and resourceful. It's about not minding that we've been left or sacked, humiliated or bullied. It's about never losing an erection and knowing how to rule an empire without taking to bed and pining for mother. It's ultimately about never, ever being that most dreaded and abhorrent of things, a crybaby. The best way to break the loneliness must be to admit with humour and grace that it exists, and that one may be more than fed up that it does so. Of course men often don't know how to be close. Of course they might be substantially friendless. It should be no surprise if they've never had an honest conversation with another member of their gender. Little in their histories allows for such an eventuality. If we were tempted to make a practical change, we might design some packs of conversation cards and give them out to men to take with them to the bar and the pub, the shooting range and the golf club. On them would be printed a range of questions of a kind that men might long to ask one another, and seldom can. When did you last cry? What would you want to tell me if you knew I wouldn't judge you? When do you feel most anxious? What makes you despair? What do you want to be forgiven for? What does the small boy inside you feel? Most would agree that such cards were naturally idiotic and unnecessary, but how useful they might be if they provided even a small opportunity for a few men to let down their guard and reveal a more complex reality. The histories of art and literature are all the proof one might require that men are capable of the greatest empathy and tenderness. The tragedy is that men are so seldom able to direct these emotions towards one another that they must spend their lives barricaded in themselves, in dread of becoming, in the eyes of their fellow men, a child or a woman, that they must waste so much time and be so brave in defending an illusion that they never asked to be a part of.
So, that's a different perspective.
Interesting. Very interesting.
What do you think? Well, do you think the women have it worse, or do you think the men? I mean, this shouldn't be a competition, but just curious from your perspective.
I think the men definitely have it worse. And my husband and another friend at our ethical society decided to start a men's group.
Oh, cool.
We've had a women's group since the 60s, but we needed a men's group. So my husband and someone else decided to start it, and they're having a wonderful time. They meet once a month. They go to different, you know, people's houses, or they go to different restaurants, or they'll be outside. But it's really nice for them. I think they're getting closer as a result of this.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering whether, you know, as we assess it, I don't understand how the social scientists measure this, but whether it's that men are more isolated or feel the lack of close contact less than women do, where women want it more, need it more, maybe pursue it and therefore have it, have connection more than most men. You know, I remember a discussion with my ex-husband as we were approaching divorce. And we were talking a lot and discussing what had gone wrong. And I said to him, if we talked like this all the time, we'd have a marriage. And he said
This is your first husband that we're talking about.
Yes, first of the two.
Yes.
And he said, if we talked like this all the time, I would die. You're ripping open my ribcage.
Oh, wow.
So to what to me was normal, comfortable, but needed, badly needed communication, you know, the kind of connection I needed and was comfortable with, to him was unbearably intimate and close.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that.
So he had friends, but, you know, he and his friends went to hear jazz concerts or they went to watch sports. My friends and I sat over coffee and dinners, you know, schmoozing about our relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm not, you know, I'm not entirely sure that that's a male thing or that was the particular personality of that person,
true,
but it could have been
true.
Both. It could have been both. Listeners, are you lonely? How long have you felt that way? Do you think there's anything you could do that would make you feel less lonely? And if you're not currently lonely, but you've been lonely in the past, we'd love to hear about what changed. Do you know anyone who's dealing with loneliness? Our number is 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Call us and tell us about what you think about this topic of loneliness and how it might relate to you. Sharon, you want to pick up where you left off reading?
Oh, okay. Well, we were talking about the ages of people who experience depression. So is it next the emotional and physical consequences? Is that what you would like me to read?
Yes.
Or,
yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, there are emotional and physical consequences. The emotional health, loneliness predicts depression, anxiety, and suicidal ideation. Hmm. And loneliness also affects physical health, increases the risk of heart disease, stroke, and dementia. Equivalent mortality risk of smoking 15 cigarettes a day?
Yeah.
Associated with weaker immune function. The causes and contributing factors. Obvious contributors include screen addiction and social media displacement of real-world interactions. And another obvious contributor is suburban sprawl, car dependence, and the decline of public spaces.
Yeah, so when we kind of left urban centers and spread out, I mean, life in the suburbs can be really particularly lonely. You know, people want their yards and all that stuff, but life can be pretty lonely in the suburbs. I think that also less obvious contributors, one thing that's named is air conditioning. So with air conditioning,
that's so strange.
I know,
yeah.
With air conditioning, we stopped having front porches. And that whole front yard culture where, you know, your neighbors would be walking by and you'd be like, hey, Dan, hey, Meg, you know, and all that it doesn't occur anymore. We don't have those kind of passing by and seeing each other hanging out on the porch.
You think even in the city, remember the people sitting on the stoops, you know, on the steps in the
right.
front of the brownstones.
Yeah, the whole building would be on the front stoop or the roof.
Yeah, and the mama had that folding chair that she could bring down and sit out there and watch the kids, and yeah, very little of that anymore.
Yeah, or people kind of leaning out their front window on the first floor so they could also talk to the people on the stoop. Yeah, I remember all that. And then workplace changes, right? Sharon, why don't you continue?
Well, workplace changes include remote work. Our new gig economy reduces social bonds. Families are more dispersed now. There are fewer multi-generational households, and people are living geographically separate from their kin. Cultural narratives, emphasis on independence and self-sufficiency or over-interdependence.
Yeah.
In other words, in America, we're proud of our independence.
Yes, unfortunately we are. We have a caller on the line, so let's hear what they have to say. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Emma. I'm calling from Brooklyn.
Hey, Emma from Brooklyn. How are you?
Good, thank you. Well, I just wanted to jump in, and I just wanted to say that I have lived in the U.S. for the last 20 years, and it is very lonely here. And I am originally from Turkey, and I still, like, remember as a child, you know, growing up. I lived all my adult life here in the U.S., but I remember as a child I was growing up, there was a big community, you know, like the families got together. Definitely at the weekends, but even sometimes, you know, weekday evenings. I knew, like, my mom sometimes left work and met her friends for, you know, a coffee before coming home. And none of that is happening in my life.
None of that's happening in your life. It's a little noisy, with a little hard to hear you. But, yeah, you're saying that things were real different when you were younger.
Right, and I think it's both cultural but also time-wise because, you know, as I said, I grew up in a culture that was definitely a lot more social, a lot more interaction, but also the time. So, you know, right now I'm thinking, like, even if I wanted that kind of life where I see, you know, more of my friends more often, it is kind of not even possible for me with my work and my kids and, you know, constantly taking my kids from here to there and going to work and coming back and kind of just like there's no time.
Yeah.
And
Emma, if you were back in Turkey, if you were in Turkey, would you be able to have more of that family together time? If you have relatives who are still there, do they have more of that family time?
My relatives are still there. And honestly, I didn't even, like, it was really more of a friendship than the relatives that, you know, my family had. And I know my friends that I left back are still definitely more getting together, you know. So there's definitely that cultural component. I feel like I, you know, it's just an example. There are, you know, there are families that we're friendly with and we want to get together and we kind of have to, like, plan it like 2-3 weeks ahead of time. Which day, who is going to be available, how can we possibly, you know, make it work so that we can actually get together, you know.
Yeah, it's understandable that, it gets so technically difficult to line up your family's availability and the other family's availability that people get frustrated and wind up not tackling it.
And we tend to live, we have friends who are so far apart. You know, it used to be friends in the neighborhood.
I do live in New Jersey and I work in Brooklyn, so that's pretty horrible. But I do have friends. I do have friends in, you know, New Jersey. But I feel it's also the fact that how we raise the children and the families these days, that a lot of the families that I know are constantly driving their kids from, you know, one class to another, from one program to another, and it's just, you know, like, we are, like, drivers of our kids, and their schedules, in addition to our work schedules, kind of just make it impossible. Like, I can't just say, I get out of work today, and I'm just going to go have a coffee with a friend, because, oh, I need to leave work, and I need to be back at home at this time, because I need to take my kids to wherever, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets so much harder to do that casual socializing.
Exactly. That it just feels like a lot a lot more busier than what I, what my parents were when they were younger.
Yeah, you know.
Casual, like they would just call up and say, okay, you know, let's get together. Are you available tonight? And somebody would be available, right?
Right. And yeah.
Like, right now.
It sounds so wonderful.
Yeah, you know what also occurs to me, Emma, the decline of traditional community hubs like the church or the synagogue or the mosque, the decline of religion in our society, you know, kind of has left a gap, because people did, you know, at least go to, you know, say on a Sunday they'd go to church or whatever, they'd meet. And that leads me to pitch Ethical Culture Society to you,
because I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, in New Jersey there are alternatives.
Right. Yeah, you're right. I absolutely agree with it. And then, yeah, you're right that people would just go to church, and then after church, maybe they would, you know, just say, okay, let's, you know, we're all here. So some people would be able to hang out, and that will just create more opportunities. But yes, it's just...
Yeah, it's changed.
And let me tell you, when COVID came, I was very, very, very depressed, because I was like, I hate to be lonely, and I don't know how I can deal with this, right? And I mean, we got through it. But, you know, that was like one of the things, but then that changed life too.
Yeah.
So, and Emma, you have children, you have family. Huh? I kept thinking during COVID of the people who were single, who didn't even have other people in their homes with them. It had to have been so painful.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
Yeah.
It was really hard. Emma, what town are you in Jersey?
Morristown.
Oh, okay. So you're not that far. You could there's an Ethical Culture Society in Maplewood, and you know, that could be something.
Come hang out with us. We've got folk music on the front porch on this Friday night. Sunday morning there's a good talk at 11 o'clock. Everybody's welcome, and there's food and eats together afterwards.
Yeah. You could look it up online. It's the Ethical Culture Society of Essex County. Yeah.
And wide open to everybody.
Yep.
Sounds lovely. Thank you.
All right. Emma, thank you for your call, and call us again.
Thank you. I will.
Okay. And I think we have another call on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Hazel from Long Island.
Hey, Hazel. How are you?
Hey, I love your topic. It's something that I always think about. You know, my partner, my brothers, my son, and loneliness, because, you know, they have to be so macho. They spend so much time being macho, and I always wondered about their relationships, because my partner, it always seems that his relationships are superficial. And now when you played that recording, I said, wow, it makes so much sense, you know?
Yeah.
Women, I guess, we're more social. I come from a big family, so there were so many of us. I never had a problem. Even in school, if I didn't have a lot of friends, I came home to a big household. But now that I'm older and I'm retired, things are different. But, you know, I never get lonely, which is weird. I don't get lonely. I can always find something to do. But I know with men, it's different.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I mean, maybe, you know, it's great. It's great that you don't get lonely and you're happy with yourself. I mean, that's something that's, you know, something to be really, you know, to appreciate. That's something to aspire to. It's hard for most people, you know, to just not need others. But... But I'm sure, you know, I'm sure
you know what? I was always
do.
Very introverted. Maybe that's what it is, too.
Yeah.
So.
But you probably do need others from time to time. You know, we can't always be alone.
Right. Well, I mean, I enjoy being with people, but I enjoy being with myself. But I just, you know, the thing about the men and the vulnerability and some of the questions that he said, you know, that they could say, look, you know, I'm in love with my colleague. I can't get it off. It was funny, but it made sense, though.
Right. Yeah, we need conversation cards. Perhaps the suggestion wasn't so crazy. Hazel, thank you so much for your call. Appreciate it. Call us again.
People can just join groups, like you said. Join a group.
Yeah, you know, there is an ethical culture on Long Island, if I may talk for Sharon.
Sure.
Yeah, there's one. What was it, Garden City, Sharon?
It's in Garden City. It's called the Ethical Humanist Society of Long Island. It's in Garden City, right on Old Country Road, just when it meets Herrick's Boulevard.
Yeah, very nice group.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Hazel, thanks for your call. Call us again.
You're listening to Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM WBAI New York. Non-commercial, listener sponsored. Peace and Justice Radio.
On Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on with my life. Now, you said all that. I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
Have a third caller. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hi there. I think it's me, correct?
Yes, it's you, correct.
It is me, correct.
My name is
it's Bob.
Bob?
Once again, no coincidence, from Long Island.
Okay, good.
And
yep.
Having lived in Manhattan and Lower East Side for approximately 35 years, and then I went to the West Coast, came back to Long Island, I've become sort of my own social psychologist when it has to deal with my own desperation, despair, and loneliness in this provincial dystopian kind of suburb that I live in.
Oh, yeah.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Absolutely. I like the way you put that, Bob. It is a provincial dystopian nightmare in some ways. Suburbs can be, Long Island can be that way. I grew up on Long Island. I know what that's like.
I grew up here too, and I arrived back here when I inherited my mom's house. There are so many things inherent into the epidemic of loneliness now. Movie theaters are gone, mom and pop stores are gone, the simple interactions between neighbors are long since gone. Soup culture never really was here to begin with, because the suburbs, as you know, were designed for the kind of alienating, infrastructure that it is.
Yeah.
Or the suburban nuclear family behind closed walls, and in other words, if you don't have as I find being so alienated here, I get to witness how other people live and how they survive. It's if you don't have that family infrastructure here, of the nuclear family with the cousins and brother-in-law and relatives. Plus your high school friends, there's no possibility of making friends here. Really.
Bob, let me ask you, where in Long Island are you?
I'm in the Lynbrook Franklin Square Malvern area.
Oh, well, in that case, I've got a men's group for you.
No, you don't, because you have to be a member of the Ethical Society.
Oh, you've got to be. Well, you could be a member.
Yeah, I'll go up to the Ethical Culture Society. Sure, I know where it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's Sharon's husband, Chris, has a men's group. There are alternatives. They might not be as plentiful as they used to be, or than we need them to be. But the few that are, we really do need to utilize.
Bob, it sounds to me, I'm from Jersey, but you're
Bob. One sec.
Suburbs is that the alienation is sort of it's intrinsic, that the people who live here sort of grew up here, or they migrated from similar places, and there's it's kind of a recirculation of mediocrity. People don't know, they have no perspective on where they live. If I were to say to a fellow Long Islander, "This really sucks," excuse my language, they would know what I'm talking about, because they don't have the perspective that can only come from being outside of the.
You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt, but Arnell, I don't know if you're aware, but Nassau County still is the most segregated county in America, and it's been this way since the 50s.
Wow.
I'm not sure if that impacts other things, but I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, it is segregated. It's made, the frustrating thing for me is I'm not playing victim. I could be gaslighted and be accused of playing victim. But it is constructed to alienate, as I said. It's not a place that is. It's not. You don't come to Long Island to basically be creative and motivated and progressive. You come to Long Island to settle in to an infrastructure, and.
Elaine, you were going to say something for Bob. To Bob.
No, I was just thinking that Bob's take on things is so philosophical and analytical, and you've lived, in very different communities. You'll find yourself at home in something like the Ethical Culture Society, where
you're dropping out.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah,
is that better?
Coming in and out, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, sorry about the connection. You want to be with people who are interested in ideas and seeing things in a broader perspective, and the Ethical Culture Society is not a bad place to start, because that's exactly what people gather for there. You know, in other communities, if you have a local pub, or people belong, they support their local sports team. But it sounds like your perspective is much more complex. You want to be amongst people who are interested in ideas.
Another idea is the UU churches.
Because, having lived on the Lower East Side, there was Stoop culture. I knew all my neighbors. There were musicians. There were friends.
Yeah.
Everybody, seemed to be having this kind of dynamic life of the dynamic interior life.
Yeah. Elaine and I also are veterans of the Lower East Side, and we know what you're talking about, Bob.
Yeah.
Bob, we have another call on the line we got to get to, but thank you for your call. I hope you maybe reach out to Ethical Culture. I'm sorry if the show is starting to sound like a big commercial for Ethical Culture.
We appreciate it, Arnell.
It's a good group, and I think that's one way to deal with loneliness.
And let me throw in another good group would be the Unitarian Universalist churches also.
I thought of them.
Yeah.
Those are the only two alternatives, because the 12-step groups out here.
Yeah, well, that's different. That's something very different.
I know it's different, but it's not.
That's where they meet, yeah.
It's there, even no fellowship.
Right.
But the UU are also good idea people.
On radar for a while, and I'm despairing. It's very hard, at this point. It breaks you down. And at a certain point, despair sets in, and that's dangerous.
Bob, sometimes when I just make one little move towards something, at least I give myself a lot of encouragement, because I say, well, okay, I took that one step. And, maybe if you could just take some steps, you can feel a little bit more empowered, and maybe there's a solution.
As long as I have caffeine to get me there.
Okay. Well, definitely. If you can afford it, definitely.
Years, there's a lot of other extenuating circumstances that led me back here. So it's also kind of a little more complicated than I, can do on like a 2-minute phone-in show,
Yeah, yeah.
But I want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well,
you got our kind of ideas.
Well, call back. Call again, Bob. Bob, thank you for your call so much. Appreciate it.
Long-time listener.
All right. Much appreciated. Keep calling, Bob. Appreciate it. Let's get to our next call. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm so lonely. No, wait.
I hear you.
This is Crystal from New York.
Yep.
I always wanted to say that. You know how you see in the movies?
Yeah.
From Crawford. Oh, I'm so lonely. I was working here. This is my opportunity. Okay. Now, getting back to me. Okay.
You did it very well.
Very well.
Did I do a great job?
Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, did you have great callers? Like the lady said about men, you know, they're being forced to be so masculine and they can't cry and all this kind of stuff, which is probably why they're bugging out shooting their women the way they are these days. It's good when you can identify you lonely. That's the real most important thing. Unfortunately,
it's true. Recognizing what you're feeling.
Or no, if you weigh out in the sticks and stuff, and there's nothing, but in the city, there should be no loneliness because there's too much funding that goes into programs. They always got a program for something. So loneliness. I think Arnan, is that how you pronounce your name?
Arnell.
I think we have to go within ourselves. A lot of us are fortunate. The way, you know, if you grew up in the 60s or 70s, 80s, or whatever, you did. If you was 40, you had two parents. Because back then, marriage was more prominent than it is now. So even if the parents didn't get along, they were there. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there were more kids. Like
yeah.
Black families, it was like the minimum was 7 kids. So you wasn't...
Minimum 7. Please, Crystal.
I can name all the kids.
Let's not stereotype here. Okay, go on.
But, you know, you could be in a crowd and still be lonely, right? Oh, no, so we know that part.
Oh, yeah.
But I think what helps us is, like, a person like me, who always been told how cute she was, oh, he's so pretty, he got nice hair, but I'm lonely. When I was a child, I didn't know I was lonely. But guess what, Arnell? I was popular in school because I had a big, big, big afro, dashikis and stuff. So the kids always looked up to me. But they ended up doing better in school than I did anyway. But they looked up to me because I had that look. Okay, so what am I saying? The fact that I went to church, I think that helped a lot. I don't remember, Arnell, being lonely as a child. I really don't. And I'm old. But
do you feel lonely now, Crystal?
I actually don't. I think part of it is because I'm used to holding it down on my own. Like I had a baby who was born slightly ill. I held it down. This dude tried to jump me. I held it down. In other words, I was the person who always could hold stuff down, if you understand what I mean when I say that. Put on a face, even when I don't feel right. All this fake stuff. And we have to, it's okay to be fake when you have to be, but the realization is knowing what's going on in you. When you know you're lonely, that means you can get the help. It's like when you have a problem, when you know you have that problem. You're a junkie, well, you can look in the mirror and say, you know what, I'm a dope fiend. So you can get the help, but if you keep saying, no, I ain't no dope fiend, if you don't, it's...
Yeah, denial will not help.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I think a lot of us, I like how you're giving people alternatives to their loneliness. You tell them, yo, well, there's a so-and-so program over and such. And that's how we do it. That's the way it's supposed to be. Don't just, you know, they say the easiest way to a problem is knowing where to find the solution.
Yeah.
That's the easiest way. And I think with cities and stuff like this, there's no reason why there should be all this loneliness. There's too many funding. Are we funding this program? And that program is funded with this and this and this. It shouldn't be. I can go on and on.
Is there a particular website that you would recommend for people in the city that are trying to connect with programs?
Well, I know of one program that is called the Compassionate Friends. It's for people whose children have died and siblings of those children that have died. It's called the Compassionate Friends. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who've lost their children through murder, suicide, whatever, that feel that they're alone. Well, honey, go to Compassionate Friends. It's in Manhattan. They usually meet. You can Google it, and that's how you find it. But the Compassionate Friends, when you go there, you come in with your story. Oh, my daughter died from such and such. And then you meet a woman who lost 3 children to murder. It's like you forget what happened to you, and you just, you're watching what's happening to other people. So you actually come out of yourself, and it actually helps you grow. It's not that you're being selfish. Well, what was me? I want everybody to feel sorry for me. No, that's good, too. You need the empathy. But at the same time, you see so many other tragedies that's like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Look, how many kids? And stuff like that. So it puts you out of yourself for a minute, if you understand what I'm trying
to
say.
Yeah, sometimes it could give you perspective. Sometimes it doesn't make things hurt less, but it is good to have perspective to know that, you know, just being human is painful, and there's no way to avoid certain pain. So, yeah. Crystal, thank you. Yeah, Crystal, thank you for your call. And call again, all right? And, yeah, there's some heavy stuff there.
I think she used a wonderful word. Crystal said empathy. Because I think that part of loneliness is feeling that isolation, like kind of closed in a shell. And if you're feeling empathy, there's usually a sense of connection.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I know that there's a lot of other stuff in New York City. There are groups if you're over 65. There's also ethical culture in New York City as well.
Yeah.
That's the main branch of ethical culture, right? They are on 64th and Central Park West, I think.
It's the mothership.
Yeah.
The mothership.
It's our Vatican.
Yep. So our number is 212-209-2877. We can take your call if you want to talk to us about how you're dealing with not being lonely, or if loneliness is something that you're challenged with. Call us and talk to us about it. You're listening to Naturalistic Support on WBAI 99.5 FM, New York. And I'm Arnell Doray with Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. And we're ready to take your call. As a matter of fact, we've got a call right now. So let's get there. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello again. This is Attila from Long Island. How are you?
Attila, good to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you so much. Dealing with loneliness, whether it exists or not, as far as I'm concerned, well, a particular story of mine is that right before the pandemic, I had a breakup with my girlfriend. And then on top of it all, she had to go back to her country because of the pandemic. And it just put everything into another whole perspective. Dealing with the pandemic, family here, and just made me think, wow, let me look at my life. Let me look at the world. And it made me really get very introspective about what is this existence. And then after the pandemic, I felt very relieved. I felt a great sense of gratitude. I made it through. My family made it through. A few friends did not. And now, as far as loneliness, I don't feel that I'm older than perhaps some of the people out there in this world. And I do get to fall back on former experiences in my mind. But I have my connections, everyday real-world connections where I go, my current relationships, my family, and I don't feel lonely. It's just, there's just so many places I could go to literally or even just in my mind. So that's my story.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, that's great. You know, sometimes I also will be comforted when I think about, you know, other times in my life that were more filled with social contact and, you know, and dating and all the things that make life joyful. If you've had some of that in your life, it does, I think it can help make you, you know, less, have less despair. And I do think it can.
I think so, yes. Yeah. Because also, I've had a very intense story. We all have a story. Challenges, et cetera, whatever you want to call them. And I mean, a very multicultural story, which I might have alluded to in a past conversation with you guys. And I, you know, I'm like, wow, thank God I get a chance to just breathe and not deal with the intensity, let's just use that word, of the relationships I've had and still have. that keep me going, whether I need caffeine or not. Sometimes I don't even need my morning coffee because I'm like, wow, okay, here we go again. But then again, that's what makes life interesting, you know?
Yeah. Attila, thank you so much for your call. Really appreciate it.
You got it.
Call us again. And we've got another call we've got to get to. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
Hey, George from Queens.
Hey, George. How are you?
Pretty good. I think loneliness is something that it's happening because it's supposed to happen. I've heard often that, you know, our governments, they try to make us feel isolated and like we are alone. In many ways, I mean, I think it started as far back as the invention of religion. You know, they started separating us like that, and then they cut out into smaller groups, until, you know, we're in today and we have...
George, we're having a hard time hearing you. Could you talk closer to the phone and a little...
Is this better?
Slightly, yeah. Go on. So you're saying that there's been a long progression toward us being as isolated as we are today.
Absolutely. Exactly. You said it in better words than I could.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, look, obviously the nuclear family is such a lonely unit. You know, it's so isolating to just be, you know, two parents. And now, since we're not having a lot of children, you've got lots of families where a kid's growing up all alone, or maybe with a brother or a sister or their twin. But that's if they're lucky. I mean, you don't have these large farm families anymore. And, yeah, the trend has been toward greater isolation.
I mean, I come from a family of 13 siblings.
13?
Wow. That's a really good-sized family.
Your poor mother.
And they were with us until the end. I mean, my poor dad, too, he had to... work for all of us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, they're passed away now, but we're like that. And today I feel lonely sometimes. I'm a married man, and I'm lonely.
Yeah.
You were used to a really big crowd around you.
All the time. You know, and now I'm two people in the house, and that's it.
Yeah.
And my
kids. Yeah. We hear you, George. There's got to be stuff in Queens maybe that you could get involved in, though. You know, Queens has a lot of cultural things going on.
Indeed. I was looking up ethical society as you guys were speaking. I'm definitely interested in visiting.
Good.
There's a great one in Brooklyn.
Yeah. There used to be one in Queens. I actually spoke at it, but that was about 25
close.
Years ago. Yeah.
Yeah, that one doesn't exist anymore.
Good. Yeah.
Brooklyn may be far off, but it's easy to get to.
So. Yeah.
Park Slope. Beautiful one in Park Slope.
Yeah, Park Slope, Brooklyn. Yep. George, thank you. Thank you for your call. We've got to wrap it up because we are getting to the end of our program. So, George, call us again. All right. And, it flew by.
It flew by. There's so many aspects we didn't get into.
Yes, there are so many aspects that we didn't get into that we will have to revisit this. And I'd also like to remind people that we are desperate for your support. WBAI really could use, if you could become a BAI buddy, make a small monthly donation in the name of naturalistic support. It'll go a long, long way, and it could be really small. We could be 10, 15 bucks, even $5 a month would make a difference. Go to buddy.wbai.org, buddy.wbai.org. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnell Doré. And joining me today was Elaine Durbach and Sharon Stanley. Thanks to our engineer Rich Johnson and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of Naturalistic Support. Archived editions of our program can be found on our website at wbai.org and at equaltimeforfreethought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.